Well, the midterm elections are finally over. And we think that we're getting back to something a bit more tranquil now. Chance would be a fine thing. The government seems to be in more chaos and more strife than it was before, quite frankly. Let's just turn over to Proverbs, just remind ourselves of something, a proverb that applies in this particular case. Because I'd like to talk about Satan's end-time weapon today. And here in Proverbs chapter 26, notice what it says in verse 20. It says, "Where no wood is, there the fire goes out. So where there's no talebearer, the strife ceases." And if you look at the media, quite frankly, today, it's so anti-the president that there's a bearing of tails. And you continually are watching this being unfolded in the television screens and so on. And it's not just the American media either. It's the world media. I know I look at the BBC sometimes, and I think, you know, the bias, the liberal bias, the liberal press bias that's coming out of their mouth, and it's a consistent attack that seems to be happening. And if we find any strife, which is, we do find a great deal, then there's a bearing of tales, a bearing of information. And Sky is the same, whether you actually have the Sky broadcast, the Sky News, but it's the same. CNN, Washington Post, New York Times, I think there's about 300 or so that they've actually put their name to counter President Trump's policies. And if, quite frankly, you look at some of the things that come out, this last week I looked at the news on the BBC, and they had this particular individual interviewed. Again, what they look for is sound bites so often. And this particular individual was just somebody off the street that had just been in the polling station. And they made the comment, "Everything that comes out of his mouth is a lie." You know that that's not true, because it's not like the old story, the two guards by the doors. One always tells a lie, one always tells the truth. What are you going to ask them to say which is the right door? Of course, you ask either of them. If you ask the other chap whether it's the right door, and if they say no, then it's the right door. But, warped logic. But, everything that comes out of his mouth is a lie. Well, obviously, everything that comes out of his mouth isn't a lie, but you've got that message in there. It's, again, it's a bearing of a tale, bearing of a soundbite. You can say a soundbite bearer. And quite frankly, that is true in so many areas. Another one that I came across was Melania Trump, Mrs. Trump, was the most bullied person in the world. I mean, what a survey that must have been done to be able to produce that statement. I mean, you go through the entirety of China and India and interview every family to make sure that who's the most bullied person in the world. I remember, again, I don't know if it was this week or the week before, I noticed on one news report that Mr. Trump was going up the steps to Air Force One. It was pouring with rain. He had an umbrella with him. And he went up to just to get into Air Force One. And he was struggling with the umbrella to try and close it. He couldn't close it, so he just laid it down on the side and walked in. And that was headline news, because obviously he didn't take care of his umbrella. And these, if you can't say something good about somebody, say nothing at all, saying is. But today it's been changed. If you can't say something bad about somebody, make it up. And so often that is the case. And Brett Kavanaugh. There's been, because it's not, many times it's not the person involved, it's somebody else who's close to them. And Brett Kavanaugh, somebody was saying to Judy in email that they know more about Brett Kavanaugh at 17 years old. And Brett Kavanaugh is the electing onto the Supreme Court. Know more about him at 17, 35 years ago, than they do about his present record, because the dirt that's been brought up, the sins and faults of youth, do thou, O Lord, forget, David said, but the media doesn't do that at all. And quite frankly, they say, where no wood is, the fire goes out. So where there's no talebearer, the strife ceases. So if the strife is there, the talebearing is going on. And it's interesting, there's a book just come out recently about Charles and Diana. I mean, how long has she been dead? 30 years? Must be getting on for 30 years, must be something like that. But this book's just come out, and the analysis, again, the petulant prince who never gave tragic Diana a chance. This is the article from the Daily Mail this week. Wednesday, wasn't it? I want to just contrast that with something we came across from the preface of a book, of a true story. You probably, well, whether you've read the story or not, The Riddle in the Sands. You ever heard of it? It's a story, from what I remember, I read it years and years ago, but from what I remember, it's sailing, I remember the sailing bit anyway, and he was sailing across near Denmark or somewhere, and he came across the preparations for World War One being made by the Germans, and it's something along those lines, but it's a true story. But in the preface, he goes into the reason he's actually decided to publish. And he says, just let me read the debate that was going on. And remember, this is back in 1902 that this was written. The great drawback was that the Englishman bearing an honoured name was disgracefully implicated, and that unless infinite delicacy was used, innocent persons, and especially a young lady, would suffer pain and indignity if his identity were known. Indeed, if troublesome rumours containing a grain of truth and a mass of falsehood were already afloat. And he goes on a little bit later, he says, remember also that these people are living now in the midst of us, and if you find one topic touched on with a light and hesitating pen, do not blame the editor who whether they are known or not, would rather say too little than say a word that might be savoured of impertinence. You know, just contrast that approach about the debate as to whether to publish or not, about what's happening in the press at the moment with so many things, as I say. And the question I want to ask today is, do we understand what is happening spiritually? Spiritually, in this world that we see on our television screens day in and day out, there is a spiritual force at work. Do we understand what's happening spiritually? Are we ready ourselves spiritually to properly counter? And if you want a title for it's what we're countering, Satan's end time weapon. Because this bearing of tales is an end time weapon. It's an end-time weapon by Satan. It was something we see, we're coming in contact with continually through our television screens, through the newspapers that we read, and we're living in a world that is going in that direction. And the areas I want to go into, the six of them altogether. First of all, I want to talk about Satan's present position, because his present position is given to us in Revelation. And secondly, I want to talk about the fact that he can use truth. It doesn't all have to be error by any stretch. It can be a mixture. It's just out of here. Troublesome rumours containing a grain of truth and a mass of falsehood are already afloat. Well, they don't have to contain a mass of falsehood. Third point I want to deal with is judging motives. Because all you have to do is to put a false motive in there, and that's your falsehood. all the facts can be completely true. And fourthly, as far as our own personal actions are concerned, when to confront. Fifthly, when to cover. And finally, the reason for the whole exercise, which is reconciliation. Because that's what we have to be aiming for, as far as our own personal lives are concerned. So Satan's present position. Let's just have a look. I'll just move my Bible here. There's a rubber mat on here, which is excellent for holding your notes firm. And the trouble is when you're trying to move your Bible. Right. It's in position now. It'll never be moved again. So, okay. Revelation 16. Revelation 16. These things we know as far as Satan is concerned, but we need to be not ignorant of his devices and not ignorant of the way he's operating. He's prophesied to operate at the end time. But here in Revelation 16, the sixth angel sounds, pours out his vial upon the great river Euphrates. That's where we want to be. Yes. And the sixth angel, verse 12, out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the waters were dried up, and the way of the kings of the east may be prepared. And I saw three unclean spirits. So remember, the word spirit is also a movement of air. It's pneuma. Therefore, it can be the air, the spiritual air that's moved to produce the words. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs coming out of, notice where they're coming out of, out of the mouth of the dragon and the mouth of the beast and out of the mouth of the false prophet. So these three are coming from the mouth, and they're the spirit, they're evil spirits. And as far as the mouth is concerned, it's very much what we find in the newspapers and in the television reports today. It's the, well, let's turn back to the Revelation 12 as well. Revelation chapter 12. And just remind ourselves of this very well-known verse. And the great dragon who has cast out the old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world, verse 9. And he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accuses them before our God day and night. So it's highlighted that his, how does he accuse? Well, he's bearing of tales. The bearing of tales and the tale-bearer, and gossip, and this is something that's coming out of a spiritual source. And verse 11, and they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and delivered not their lives unto the death. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe unto the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. And quite frankly, the word being used, he could say Satan came down to you from you. Or he could, in fact, there's another scripture, if you drop in your notes, Revelation 9, verse 11, his name is also Apollyon. Now, Apollyon, it means the destroyer. And it's, quite frankly, this is the aim. The word devil means the slanderer. The word devil means the words that are used. Remember, he's in restraint. He's in restraint. He can't operate on his own power. He's operating through the air. He's the prince of the power of the air. It's infusing the air. And that air is causing the, it's what we see on the televisions these days. And a liberal press, and also the right wing, the division that is taking place in this area. So he says here, having great wrath, that he knows he has a short time. But it's the devil that's come down, and the word devil means the slanderer. If we turn over to Ezekiel 28, something like this must have happened earlier on. Again, the letter doesn't change its spots, but the end time weapon is the same weapon that is used from the word go. He talks about in verse 15 about this Lucifer, that you are perfect in your ways and in the day that you were created until iniquity was found in you. By the multitude of your merchandise, it says in the King James, but your journeying, they have filled, you wonder who is they? He said, they have filled you, the midst of you with violence. Is it a case that they got together with the other disgruntled angelic realm and talked it up, and they fed off each other, and they therefore filled his heart with violence, going in a certain direction that perhaps it wasn't going to go in originally? Now, that's speculation. But it does say they. It says they have filled the midst of you with violence. And it's something they were in a multitude of his travelling. Which, again, what's he travelling? What's he travelling for? And you have sinned, therefore I'll cast you out as profane out of the mountain of God, and I will destroy you, or remove you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You have multi-corrupted your wisdom by reason of your brightness, and I'll cast you to the ground, and I'll lay you before kings, and they may behold you. You defile your sanctuaries by the multitude of your iniquities, by the iniquity of your traffic. And again, it's the same word being used, journeyings. Therefore, I will bring forth a fire in the midst of you, and it shall devour you, and I'll bring you to ashes upon the earth in the sight of all those that behold you. Now, it's going into the Prince of Tyre. It's going back into the Prince of Tyre, but it also is dual in that sense. All they know you among the people shall be astonished at you. You'll be a terror, and never shall you be any more. And again, ultimately that will take place, and Satan won't be any more, and the devil also will not be any more. And it's interesting, you know, when you look at what happened with Eve and Adam and Eve, and God. Jesus Christ then confronts them, and they say, well, you know, we were scared of you because we were naked. And he says, who told you you were naked? The gossiping is going on in the background. You could tell that there's a gossiping going on that would in fact be over this subject of nakedness. It's interesting, I was talking to my wife about a time when we were staying with somebody at one time, back in the days of the press and days of Ambassador College. And this individual, this was back in 1979, it was December 1979, and it was just before the Attorney General took over, or attempted to take over. And they were on the phone every evening for maybe an hour or more over to Pasadena, and the various ideas and concepts were being passed to this individual, who then let Mr. Hunting know, and Mr. Hunting would then get in contact with people in Pasadena, hearing what he's heard, and they kept on dismissing it, because again, it was a time that was rife at that time of gossip, and this went on for several nights, and then the Attorney General and the takeover bid actually occurred. But the gossip that was going on, the gossip that was the accusation was going on. It had been going on for a year or more. And remember, when we're looking at Revelation, we're looking at something that took place where it says the devil has gone down to you. This is what happened. And we actually, you know, many of you have not actually seen this, but we have literally lived through it. We've actually seen it. We've been influenced by it ourselves. Speak for myself anyway. But Mr. Armstrong wrote an article in July 1978, that's a year before the Attorney General took over. And the article was entitled "Gossip and Accusation Must Stop." And he said, perhaps the number one problem, yes, and even the number one and most prevalent sin in God's church today is careless gossip and rumour spreading. Whether or not realised, it often becomes accusation and slander. And this was happening within the church at that time. And again, you're looking at the time just before the Attorney General took over. And he says, if a hostile student demonstration such as organised and promoted by communists had appeared on the Ambassador campus, I'd have made it my business to identify the leader and get rid of him. Once such action loses their leadership, they disintegrate. It's the same on our problem of rumours, especially those ugly rumours that discredit or accuse, actually perhaps unrealised, a form of character assassination. Now, who were they going after? Again, it's like when you're looking at Mr. Trump today. Mm-hmm. Who were they going after? Well, the Brett Kavanaugh, who is somebody close by, which would be detrimental to Mr. Trump. They were after Mr. Trump himself, but they went for Mr. Kavanaugh. And in this case, they're actually after Mr. Armstrong himself, but they went for Mr. Rader. That's who the entire focus was all about. And he says, especially those ugly rumours that discredit or accuse, actually perhaps unrealised, a form of character assassination. I fully realise that this is me a carelessness, a sort of thinking through the mouth with no deliberate intention to harm, but it does harm, and sometimes it's intended to harm. This sort of thing must be stamped out of God's church. Our leader and head of the church, Jesus Christ, is turning God's church around. Now, this was after his heart attack. This was during the time that he was trying to turn the church around, or Christ was turning the church around through him. And yet there's still these attacks that are happening. And as I say, it was attacking predominantly Mr. Rader. And Jesus Christ is turning God's church around, though he uses his human servant in so doing. I realize that many of us, including myself, may have been guilty of this through carelessness, thoughtlessness, or neglect. I know that I, at that time, was receptive to these ideas. And I'm not going to tell you what I thought, but basically I was involved with them as much as anybody. And something is hard to see that is not to be. I realise that many of us, including myself, may have been guilty of this through carelessness, thoughtlessness, or neglect. I've decided, therefore, that first we must put emphatic emphasis on this matter in teachings, sermons, and articles. But this is to be followed by direct action, seeking out the source, the one that started the rumours and the false accusations or whatever, and then making an example of that person, if necessary, before the whole church. And I feel this is Christ's way of stamping out this evil from God's church, and I act, therefore, in his name. Now, that's what Mr. Armstrong had to write, and as I say, that's about a year before the Attorney General came in with the collusion of several individuals. But as I say, the one that's behind it, the one that's really behind it, was Satan himself. And Satan's present position as far as Satan's end time weapon, and this is what he uses, he cannot, you know, he can't come out and actually fight himself. He's under restraint. So he's infusing the air, he's infusing the media with certain ideas. And we're all, every single one of us, are in that same atmosphere, and we're all watching the same things on the screens. We're all acting and being influenced by these things. And I say, it's an end-time weapon, and it's something that's going to continue and get worse, quite frankly, until the end time. And secondly, the second point I wanted to go into is the fact that he can use truth. And let's face it, and when Christ came across, or when the Pharisees came to him with a woman caught in adultery, every indication is that she was. He says, caught in the very act. Now, what happened to the man is debatable, but the inference is that the people that are actually bringing this woman to Christ were not all there witnessing the very act. In fact, if any of them were there witnessing the very act, it's very unlikely, quite frankly. So again, there had to be a certain amount of gossiping going on in this case, but it was truth. As far as he could tell, it was true. And let's turn over to Psalm 15. Psalm 15, because, as I said before, I was involved with this. I say involved. I accepted what I heard back in the 70s. I accepted it, and I didn't tell people to shut up. I didn't put a stop to what was actually going on. But Psalm 15. It says, Eternal, who shall abide in your tabernacle? Who shall dwell in your holy hill? He that walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. He that backbites not with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbour, nor takes up a reproach, and the margin is receives a reproach against his neighbour. So it's not just a case of spreading the rumours, it's a case of receiving the rumours. It's the receipt of them which is just as bad. And as I say, I was just as bad because I heard the gossip, and I believed a good deal of the gossip at that time. Yet, you know, David says, against you and you only have I sinned. Turn over to James. But even if that gossip is true, it still doesn't make any difference. Let's just remember what James actually has to say to us. James chapter 3. Let me read most of this chapter, because quite frankly it has a great deal to say to us at this time. As I say, it's Satan's end time weapon, and it's Satan's end time weapon. We've been given these scriptures. It's a spiritual side of things that we've got to make sure we understand, that we get to grips with. But here in James chapter 3 it says, for in many things, verse 2, for in many things we offend all, but if a man offend not in the word, the same is a perfect man, and is able also to bridle his whole body. And now, none of us are perfect. So, every single one of us in this room, and every single one of the people listening to me now, be that over the internet or wherever, we all need to take notice of what the Word of God has to say on this subject. Behold, we put bits in the horse's mouth, that they may obey us. We turn about the whole body. Behold also the ships which are so great and are driven by fierce winds, yet they're turned about with a very small helm, wherever the governor wants. Even so the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindles. And you think about what's going on in California right now, and the wildfires that are over there. They all started from a single lightning strike or a single match or whatever. And this is what's happened. When you're looking at the media, and the media being anti the president, current president, the idea that everything that's coming out of his mouth is a lie, that sticks. That sticks. And Melania Trump is the most, what was it? Bully person in the world. Again, that sticks. And these are ones that I've come across recently. But it's a continual dripping, a continual, how the greater matter, a little fire kindles. Again, the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it set a fire of hell, of Gehenna. Of every kind of beast and of bird and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed, and has been tamed of mankind, but the tongue can no man tame. What is needed is, again, it's a spiritual source. And what's happening at the moment is we're looking at a spiritual source which is satanic, which is being pumped out, and is being, if anything, it's being increased all the time. And the world that we're seeing, being influenced by the media through this pumping out of satanic broadcasts, having an effect on all of us, every single one of us. But a tongue can no man tame. It's not a human taming that's needed. It's a spiritual taming. And that spiritual taming is through the Holy Spirit. So we have a spirit that counteracts it. It goes against the spirit of love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, and so on. But the tongue can no man tame. It's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith we bless God, even the Father, and therewith we curse men who are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be. Does a fountain send forth of the same place sweet water and bitter? And yet this is the end time weapon that Satan is using. It's what's going to actually cause the tribulation. It's what comes out of the mouth of the leaders that will actually cause that. It's going to actually bring down America. It's going to bring down Britain, quite frankly, with Brexit. I mean, the chaos that is currently, we've got another cabinet member just resigned from the government. And, Boris Johnson is going in one direction and his brother is going in another direction. They both agree that they're not going to go in the third direction, which is Mrs. May's direction. And, the chaos, you wouldn't credit it, what we're actually witnessing. Where is it coming from? It's not coming from a physical source. All the people in the governments are looking at it as coming in from a physical source. It's not. It's coming from a spiritual source. He says, does a fountain send forth the same place sweet water and bitter? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Or a vine fig? So can no fountain yield both salt water and fresh? And the fountain, as Mr. Armstrong said, reading John 7, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. And what fountain is that flowing from? Is it coming from a spiritual, they're coming from a spiritual source, but which source? That's the question. Which source? And he said he can use truth, but it's, the truth is going in a certain direction. Can no fountain yield both salt water and fresh? Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of good conduct his and good conversation, his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, again, when the wood, there's no wood, the fire goes out. When there's no talebearer, the strife ceases. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom, in quotes, descends not from above, but earthly, sensual, and devilish. For when envying and strife is, there's confusion in every evil work. And what we're looking at continually within the media is confusion in every evil work. And that's the diet that we have. That's what's constantly going on. It's constantly having a detrimental effect on the society, and it's a detrimental effect on each and every one of us. And we will naturally go that direction. We'll go do the same, you know, monkey see, monkey do. We'll tend to go in the same direction, unless we have something in there that stops it. So, the fact that he can use truth, it's, yes, he can use truth, but he can use truth in the wrong way. And one of the thing that gives truth a lie is the judging of motives. And everything that comes out of his mouth is a lie. Melania Trump is the most bullied person in the world. And various things about Diana, Princess of Wales, and so on. We see these are sound bites, but they get in there, and the sound bites stick. And the judging motives is the lie. You know, facts may be true, but the judging of a motive is the lie. If we just turn over the page to page in my Bible anyway, James chapter 4, verse 11. It says, "Speak not evil one to another, brethren. He that speaks evil of his brother and judges his brother," speaks, the indication is he's judging his brother's motives. You can see what your brother's done, and you make an assessment of that. But it's the judging of motives that is being referred to here. "Speak not evil of one another, brethren. He that speaks evil of his brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law." And the reason for that is that his brother is trying to keep the law. He's trying to go in the law's direction. He doesn't do it all. He undoubtedly, you know, messes up the same as everyone else in this world does. But if you judge the law, then you're not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who's able to save and to destroy, and who are you that judges another? There's only one individual that we need to be worried about. In fact, let's turn over to John chapter 5. John chapter 5. In John chapter 5, there's something we need to understand and make sure we remember from this point forward. But here in John chapter 5, verse 22, it says, "For the Father judges no man, but has committed all judgment into the Son." Now, if the Father isn't judging motives, and he isn't judging motives, that's what the verse clearly and plainly says, what right have we? What right have we to judge motives? And if you just skip down to verse 26 and 27, it explains why. It says, "For as the Father has life in himself, so has given the Son to have life in himself, and has given him authority to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man." But this Son of Man was a perfect Son of Man. He lived a perfect life. You and I don't. We simply don't. So all judgment is been committed to the Son. We're usurping Christ's role if we start taking that judging of motives itself. And yet that's the lie. That becomes the lie, even if the facts themselves may be true. The lie is within the motives that we're judging. Turn over to 1 Peter. First Peter 1. It It's interesting, Matthew 5 tells us to bless, or which means, I've brought it out before, good mouth. Say something positive about somebody. Even their enemies. And yet how many times do we see that in the newspapers or within the television screens? We never see that in television screens, yet that's our instruction from both God the Father and Jesus Christ is so much higher than anything which is human, than anything whatsoever. The 1 Peter 1, verse 24, it says, "For all flesh is as grass, and the glory of man is the flower of grass. The grass withers, and the flower thereof falls away." So everything physical, this is 1 Peter 1, verse 24, all the physical is going to disappear. But notice what it says, but it's, even the flowers and the incredible shrubs and orchids and everything else, they all disappear. But in verse 25, "But the word of the Lord endures forever, and this is the word by the gospel, which by the gospel is preached unto you." This word is different. It's and the contrast is between the false words and the good words. The word of the Lord endures forever. These are the good words. So it goes into chapter 2. Remember, there's no chapter break. "Therefore, laying aside" what? "All malice, all guile, hypocrisies, envies, evil speakings." So everything there is coming out of the mouth. It's again, they're the negative words. It says, "As newborn babes desire the sincere milk of the word," and word of the Lord endures forever, than a word which is the gospel is preached unto you. "And desire the sincere milk of the word, that you may grow thereby." So, it's a case of contrasting the false with the true. But the judging of motives is something that certainly happened within the church when back in the 70s. And it's certainly something that we need to be aware of. And as we go into the end time, this end time weapon is being used to destroy, to fracture. It's being used to fracture the relationships between... you just look at what's happening in Brexit. You've got two camps, almost 50% each, at each other's throats. Look what's happening between the Republicans and Democrats in America. You got two camps, almost 50% each, at each other's throats. Where is that coming from? Recognize the spiritual source. Don't go, we shouldn't, as God's people, be blind to the spiritual source. It's no use just recognizing the news and the things that are going on. It's the spiritual source of those things that are going on, and where these things are coming from. I realize that also trickles down into the church itself, much just as it did in Mr. Armstrong's day, just in the same way. But there's a way of handling things. If we turn back to Leviticus 19, where the subject is dealt with, when it first comes up. "You shall not go up," notice in verse 16, "You shall not go up and down as a talebearer among your people, neither shall you stand against the blood of your neighbour, I am the Eternal." Now these are words from Jesus Christ, the words to ancient Israel, yes, but they form the basis of the law, the Torah, of the way that we are so to operate. And they form the basis of everything else that comes within Scripture. And so when you're looking at the subject of Satan's end time weapon and counteracting it, and when to confront, we need to take note of what it has to say to us here. So it says, You shall not go up and down as a talebearer among your people. It says in verse 17, you shall not hate your brother in your heart, but you shall in any ways rebuke your neighbour and not allow sin upon him. Now that lying sin upon him, you're going to have to know that there is sin there. And if you, having just said, you're not going to go up and down as a talebearer, that's not your source of information. Your source of information cannot be back from talebearing. Otherwise, how do you get two voices side by side with the contrary ideas being put forward? You've got to know personally, firsthand, in order to apply this. But you not hate your brother in your heart. You should in any wise rebuke your neighbour and not allow sin upon him. You shall not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbour as yourself. I am the Eternal. Again, Christ highlighted this as the second commandment, likened to the first. And on these two hang all the law and the prophets. And if we look, turn over to Galatians. Galatians chapter 6. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you that are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness. And now notice what, in fact, the aim is. The aim is to restore, the aim is to reconcile, the aim is to always positive. And if we are confronting somebody, it's not done in a hostile way. It's not you confront them, but you do not, you're not out to attack them. It says, restore such a one in a spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also are tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. If any man thinks himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let every man prove or test his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not another. For every man shall bear his own burden. So ultimately, the idea is to help those that are spiritual, to help those that are not having problems, and help them to get back on track, and help them to assess their own burdens, and to deal with their own burdens. And that's the direction this was given. Okay, let's turn over to the classic scripture, Matthew 18. Because there's things within Matthew 18 which I want to make sure that we understand. Because this is one way, one of the tools that can be used to counteract Satan's end time weapon, the tale-bearing, because as I say, we find it continually on the radio, on the television, on the newspapers, and yet it's coming from a certain spiritual source. What I want you to notice is the context in verse 2, and Jesus called a little child and set him in the midst of them and said, truly I say to you, unless you be converted and become as little children, you're not going to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Who therefore shall humble himself as his little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And who will receive such a one, a little child in my name, receives me. But whoever shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it would be better that a millstone were hanged on his neck and he is drowned in the depths of the sea. Now that's pretty intense, quite frankly. And yet this is the context that you find this chapter, these verses in. Notice in verse 10, he says, take heed that you despise not one of these little ones, who are saying to you that in heaven their angels always behold the face of my Father. For the Son of Man is come to save that which is lost. how do you think if you had 100 sheep and one going to stray, you go into the mountains and seek that which is gone astray. And if it so be that he finds it, truly I say, rejoice more over that sheep than the 99 that didn't go astray. Even so, it's not the will of your Father which is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. And in that context, and again, and it goes in verse 21, it says, then came Peter unto him and said, how often did my brother sin against me? And I forgive him to 7 times. And he said, not to 7, but to 70 times 7. And again gives the parable about the two individuals who owed a certain sum of money. And so likewise in verse 35, shall the heavenly Father do to you, if you from your hearts do not everyone forgive his brother the trespasses. But in verse 15, this is the section that we go back to continually when we're dealing with confronting people that have misjudged or whatever, who have sinned. Moreover, if your brother shall trespass against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone, and if he hear you, he has gained your brother. Now, that one verse, now I want you to notice several things. That is, that the aim is to reconcile. You've gained your brother. It's a reconciliation that's necessary. That's what we're aiming for. And that has to be the aim overall. The other thing I want you to notice is that it says, if your brother shall trespass against you. Again, we've seen in Leviticus, you can't have two verses side by side, one saying you don't go ahead and be a talebearer, and the other one saying you go ahead and you confront somebody. You confront when you know. And it says here that if your brother shall trespass against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. It's necessary to have all the facts, and the only way realistically that you will have all the facts is if it's done against you specifically. Not if it's done against an amorphous, making an amorphous mistake, and then do we hear third hand or second hand or fourth hand or whatever? And that's not going to, that doesn't fit within what the scriptures are saying. The other thing you notice is to tell him his fault between you and him alone. You don't go ahead and broadcast it. And this is when, so the answer, when do you confront? Well, again, it says, if he not hear you, then take one or two others in the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. And if you neglect to hear them, then tell it to the church. But if you neglect to hear the church, let him be unto you as a heathen man and a publican. So the end result of the process is that they are actually taken out of the church. Again, when you look, when you're initializing this process, when to confront, it's when continuing to will take somebody out of the church. When continuing the direction of life is going to take somebody out of the church, that's when you confront. But you confront with those points in mind. The fact that it's done against you specifically, it's not something third hand, that you must go alone, that you must not gossip about it. And the context is completely and totally positive. And that's when you confront. Now, when preparing this sermon, I did searching for scriptures, and the vast majority of them were when to cover. When do you cover? Well, when what is done is done. You love your neighbour as yourself. You try and make sure, again, a reconciliation is necessary. If you forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And if we're not forgiving our debtors, then we're not going to have our own debts forgiven. You put away privately as Joseph planned for Mary. Again, he was a just man and a righteous man. he again, what was done was done, and he couldn't change it. It's not another case of getting vengeance, not a case of getting a own back on somebody. And the Proverbs reinforce that, and I think you just, if I give them, let's turn over to Proverbs. Proverbs 10. Verse 12. Hatred stirs up strifes, but love covers all sins. And that is a principle. And then Proverbs 11, verse 12. He that is void of wisdom despises his neighbor, and in what he does, that is, in other words. But a man of understanding holds his peace, he keeps his mouth shut. A talebearer, it's the next verse, a talebearer reveals secrets, but he that is a faithful spirit conceals the matter. Again, it's a question as to when to cover, when to conceal, when to overlook. And Proverbs 17, verse 9. He that covers a transgression seeks love, but he that repeats a matter separates very friends. And this is, again, even Satan's end time weapon is to separate people, is to be the destroyer of relationships. He's Apollyon. He's actually given that title within the, as the prince, the power, the king. I think the wording is the king over the beast power, the spirits in the beast power. And that the Apollyon means to destroy, the destroyer. But he that covers a transgression seeks love, but he that repeats the matter separates very friends. He's allowing Satan's end time weapon to actually get in there and to separate and to try and cause problems. Turn over to 1 Peter. First Peter chapter 4. It says, but the end of all things is at hand. It's verse 7. First Peter chapter 4, verse 7. But the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer. And above all things, have fervent love among yourselves. Remember, this is again, the end of all things is at hand. And Peter was shortly... he's leaving a message for the people, knowing full well that he would eventually go ahead and have to leave this earth, and the canonized words that it would be left would have to carry the church through until the end time, until Christ's return. And so it says, but the end of all things is at hand, be therefore sober and watch for prayer. And above all things, within this environment, which is in this end time, when Satan is using his end time weapon to the greatest degree, and he's talking to directly to us, above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves, for charity shall cover the multitude of sins. So he's taking that from Proverbs 10:12 and Proverbs 17:9. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sins. He that covers a transgression seeks love, but he that repeats a matter separates very friends. And he's reinforcing this this fact. Okay, turn over to Revelation 12 again. We were there earlier on. Verse again. I pointed out this fact to you several times, but we need to reinforce it at this juncture because of the sermon topic. But it says in Revelation chapter 12, verse 9, "And the great dragon was cast out, the old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." And Mr. Armstrong felt that that took place before the, shortly before the Attorney General took over. Well, I would say that it probably was even earlier than, immediately before the Attorney General, but a year or more before, because the problems of this backbiting and backstabbing and the things that were going on within the church. It was coming from a spiritual source. It was a spiritual source that was happening at that time, which Mr. Armstrong recognized. And we've got to make sure we understand it today, that there are spiritual sources of what we're seeing in the media. And that media is trying to, a country divided against itself cannot stand. And yet that's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing within the US, we're seeing it within the UK. "And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accuses them before our God day and night. And they overcame him." And here is the solution. "And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb." And the blood of the Lamb covers sin. Accepting that blood of the Lamb is what covers sin. And that blood is covering not only our sins, but other people's sins as well. It says, James talks about having James. "Speak not evil one of another." James 4, verse 11. Or in verse 10, "Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. Speak not evil one of another, brother, and he that speaks evil of his brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you're not a doer of the law, but a judge. And there is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who are you that judges another?" And here in Revelation 12, "And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb." So it's the blood of the Lamb that covers the sins. It covers the sins both of ourselves, and it's also of those who we are maybe tempted to go ahead and criticize and condemn, and speak evil of one another, going down the world's way. Because that is Satan's end-time weapon. And we've got to make sure that that doesn't happen. And the future is going to be messy, quite frankly. Many are not going to get things right, but we still have to be righteous and behave in a righteous way. We're going to have to behave with love and concern for one another. Because if we don't, we'll end up the same division and everything else that we see within the world. And quite frankly, when we look at the fractured church today, you can go to websites which have got nothing but dirt, and they've got solid dirt on every individual possible. Where is that coming from? Recognize the spiritual source of that kind of thing. The spirit, it's not enough to just go and get the dirt and go ahead and say, "Oh, well, now we were right." It's the spiritual source of that kind of thing is exactly along the end lines of this Satan's end time weapon. And it's just as Mr. Armstrong said, it had to stop in the 70s. We've got to be doubly sure that it stops. So the aim is quite frankly reconciliation. Turn over to John 13. If I, your Lord and Master, in verse 14, if I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet, for I've given you an example that you should do as I've done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If you know these things, happy are you if you do them. Now, is foot washing only a meaningless ritual to us? Because that's all it becomes, a meaningless ritual, that you go and wash one another's feet, but we don't actually put the lesson that's there into effect. And that lesson has got to be put into effect. Quite frankly, what it says in the same chapter, almost immediately after, in verse 34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, as I have loved you, that you also love one another. As I love you, he's just done the foot washing. That's how he's loved them. And again, we've got to go to the spiritual side of things and understand what is going on spiritually. And too often we jump to conclusions and we don't have all the facts. It says, as I've loved you, that you also love by one another. And it says, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have this kind of love, obviously, one for another. 1 Peter 2. Let's just... First Peter 2. Verse 20. For what glory is it if when you're buffeted for your faults you take it patiently? But if when we do well and you suffer for it, you take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. For hereunto, because the reconciliation isn't just reconciliation on one side. It's not just the talebearer that's got to reconcile. It's the people that have been talebeared against. For what glory is it if when you are buffeted for your faults that you take it patiently? But if when you do well and you suffer for it, you take it patiently, then it's acceptable with God. For even hereunto were you called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, but when he was reviled, did not revile again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but he committed himself to him that judges righteously. We need to make sure that we understand that and apply that in the aim of reconciliation. Too often we jump to conclusions when we don't have all the facts, and it's true on both sides. If we turn over to Matthew 26, I think we've got time just to do this. Notice in verse 60. Let's pick it up in verse. Peter followed afar off in verse 58 and went to the high priest's palace and went in and sat with the servants to see how it see the end. Now the chief priests and the elders and all the council sought for false witnesses against Jesus to put him to death. See, what got Jesus crucified was slander. And let's just read what it says. But they found none. Yes, though there were many false witnesses came, yet found they none. And at last, two false witnesses. And they said, this fellow said, I'm able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. Well, that's near the truth, isn't it? Destroy this temple and I'll rebuild it again in 3 days. But he didn't say that I will destroy this temple which is what they said. This fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in three days. So it's that slight twist, you know, as God said, you must not take of all the trees of the garden. And again, it's a slight twist. It's the Satan's end time weapon. It's the soundbite that is being applied. And it talks, be aware that it talks to us in Matthew 24:12, the love of many shall wax cold. And if you look, well, you turn back a couple of pages. Because iniquity shall abound, in verse 12, and the love of many shall wax cold, but he that endures to the end, the same shall be saved. And gossip and the devil, slander, it divides. Outside persecution tends to bring together. And it may be that's what's going to happen to the church eventually. But it's interesting in Mark 13, verse 12, again, you don't need to turn there, but it says, now the brother shall betray the brother to death, and the father the son, and the children shall rise up against their parents and cause them to be put to death. These are the things that we're leaning forward into. And Satan's end time weapon is going to be active, and it appears from these verses, such as Mark 13, 12, that it's going to be active within the church as well. And certainly when you look at the wider church, there's certainly something to be said as far as I was concerned. But to be forewarned is to be forearmed. And it's interesting, from the article, This is the Life, Real Abundant Living, it says, the attitude of a Christian. Here is the kind of attitude you'll have. You'll wish others to live their lives too, up to their highest, their fullest, their best. You'll be concerned for their welfare. You'll be trying to help others every way you can, never to hurt or to injure. How different from what we see within the media today, within Brexit today, within the newspapers today. You'll never meddle. You'll never dictate, interfere, or give unwanted advice, or speak ill, or give gossip about others. Never will you go about griping, complaining, and murmuring the things that make you and others unhappy. You'll always be willing to help others by giving them a chance, and mainly you can help others by helping them to help themselves, by encouragement, by setting a good example, by thus inspiring and uplifting others, giving advice only when it's welcomed and when they want it, and are willing to open their minds to receive it. But I want you to notice just the entire thrust of what Mr. Armstrong is saying here, and just in his closing words. The thrust is outgoing, it's reconciliation, it's the way of give, it's not the way of get. And the Satan's end time weapon is very much something which is self-centered, and well, it's coming from a spiritual source. It's coming from a satanic source. And so we are forewarned and we're forearmed concerning Satan's end time weapon.